Hey there, this is Nick, and this is the Upgraded Life Podcast. And in this episode, I interviewed Philip Young, and his project is called Fatherhood Mindset. In this episode, we're going to talk about all things fatherhood. This is going to be a great show if you are a new father, or an expectant father, or any type of father, because we're going to go into the mindset of fatherhood. At the end of this episode, Philip's going to share with us a tool that he uses with his clients to help them improve their mindset. It's called the 5x5x5, and you're not going to want to miss it. So let's get on with this show. Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the Upgraded Life. All right. I am here and excited to be with Philip Young. And grateful that he took the time out of his day to be on the Upgraded Life Podcast. And Philip and I were just getting acquainted with one another, and we have a lot of overlap. And some of that overlap is we're both podcasters. We both have some deep familiarity with the education system, being that he's currently in it. And my wife was there for about 18 years. And so I expect this is going to be a fun conversation. We're both dads. So I've got a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old, and Philip's a little bit behind me in terms of the dad curve, and I'm just looking forward to a great conversation. So, Philip, why don't you introduce yourself to me and my listeners, and then tell me about your podcast. Tell me what it's about and why it is that you ventured into the world of being a podcaster.
Sure. Thanks for having me, and I'm glad we're kicking off the conversation this way, because there is a lot of overlap. I was trying to be intentional with the podcast I wanted to pursue that I launched in October, so about 4 months ago, and it really tried to connect with my story. And so, like you mentioned, you have teenage boys. I have a 2.5-year-old right now. Well, he'll be 3 in the summer. But when I had my son, actually when my wife and I got pregnant, that's kind of where the story starts, because we were working abroad in Shanghai, China. And in China, we just realized it's a city of over 20 million people. There's pollution. If there's 5 or 6 nice days a month, then that's considered a really nice month. And we're like, you know, we both kind of had roots in California. We're like, this is not, you know, regular to live in this type of pollution. So long story short, I moved back to California in the San Diego area three weeks before my son was born. And my wife and I also had kind of a calling to pursue different entrepreneurship ideas. And so long story short, within the first 6 months of my son's life, so I made an international move. I became a dad for the first time. And my wife and I decided to hire some business coaches and pursue a life coaching business all within the first 6 months. And we told ourselves, oh, you know, we've lived abroad 2 or 3 different places. We're really great at transitions. But now that I'm 2 or 2.5 years into it, I can really see that those were just like 3 really big challenges. And I didn't think they were challenges. I wasn't looking at them like challenges. But to be honest, they really were. And they really shook me to my core. And so through the life coaching business we started, I really started to have this itch or this intuition to work with dads. And so, like I said, in October 2019, I launched a podcast called the Fatherhood Mindset Podcast. And the Fatherhood Mindset is really just thinking about how you can create a vision for yourself, how as a dad, you can make small changes and really think about how you want to grow exponentially over kind of, basically the rest of your life, but as a leader of your family. So to me, it really starts with your vision, but the podcast really gets into just small changes you can make to feel better, to take care of yourself. So self-care is a big part of it. And also just to be really intentional about motivating yourself, staying positive and surrounding yourself around like a core group of people wherever you're at.
Yeah, that was kind of a whirlwind you kicked yourself into with all those changes that happened in such a small time frame. How are you adjusting now? How long has it? It's been 2.5 years now. Is that what you said?
So it hasn't. I think a part of what the fatherhood mindset is it's trying to give you tools of realizing what different category in your life you need to pay attention to. So I think every family, every person goes through different seasons. One huge challenge that I didn't mention in my introduction was that my son, between about 1.5 to 2.5 years old, started exhibiting really dangerous self-injurious behavior. And so that was just a challenge that came out of nowhere. And it's very, very difficult for me. I carried a lot of guilt and a lot of shame and a lot of questions as far as why is he doing this? It took us about 4.5 months even to kind of realize locally how to get support and how to get help, which we eventually did. And now I feel like we're on the other side of the tunnel where now that he's 2.5, he can talk, he can communicate. And it took us forever just to realize that he is like a very intelligent person, or sorry, a very, very intelligent boy who I think he learns by experiencing things. So a lot of his triggers were just either in his mind, he wanted to do something and he couldn't tell us, or perhaps like we were just trying to create the structure of the day where that wasn't possible. And so now that we know how he communicates, how we can communicate effectively to him, that has just made things like so much better. And I feel like that season of life has kind of closed now that I've learned through that very hard situation. And now going forward, I can put my focus on something else. So I think that's a good life lesson for any man or anyone listening to your podcast, is just to be aware of where do you need to put your focus. For some people, it's spending 4, 5, 6, 12 months really focused on your marriage or your relationship. For some people, it's how am I going to shift my career or find a better spot for me where I feel more aligned with my passions in my career. And for some people, it could come down to parenting, similar to the situation I just went through.
Sure. Yeah. And thanks for sharing that. And thanks for being just a tad bit vulnerable there about your son. It's one of the things, especially as a dad, right? And as a father, that when your kids are experiencing something in life or a disorder or whatever it is that, you know, sometimes we're powerless over, it really can grind on us, right, as dads. So.
Yeah. And it's hard because it's interesting. I noticed, like, I think to him, a lot of it came down to self-regulation or emotional regulation. And for me, I could see him getting ramped up. But for me, sometimes I would just absolutely lose it too, which isn't safe, isn't necessarily good. And obviously it wasn't all the time. And I have the self-awareness to know that that's not the most ideal way to react. But, you know, it was kind of a reminder to me that, you know, starting your day off is really important, to getting the right exercise 3 to 4 times a week is extremely important. So, you know, all the things you hear about how to take care of your mind and body, that's a big part of like the coaching and the podcast that I do. It's because there's so much to distract us every day, you know, and across the globe right now, there's so much news about being healthy, being safe. What do you need to prepare for a self-quarantine with the coronavirus? And there's so much just coming at us 100 miles an hour every day, that sometimes you forget to think about, well, what don't I know what's right for me? Don't I know, you know, the best way to take care of myself, whether it be physically, emotionally, or mentally?
Sure. Yeah, and you know, and you've got the lived experience of being in two separate cultures, right? That's mm-hmm. And so I can't speak to the culture in China other than what I see on TV, which we know that's going to be skewed. But you know, as of late here in the culture in the U.S. is the system is really not gearing up. It's already here that you literally don't have to leave your house for anything, mm-hmm. right? You don't have to leave your house to talk to somebody as we're doing right now, right? You can do Uber Eats or whatever the program is in your area, and they'll deliver food to you. The grocery stores in my neck of the world will deliver groceries to right to your door too. Mm-hmm. So you literally don't have to leave your house for anything. However, like you were saying, doesn't a person really know what's good for them? But if that stuff got shut off, I don't know. There's a lot of people that might feel like they're kind of stuck in terms of how to navigate the next several days or whatnot. So just kind of random thoughts related to that. You know, this culture is based on right now just providing as, you know, ultimate ease and ultimate comfort, right? And that can distract you, like
you were saying before. And I think with this culture of ease and comfort and having everything brought to us with the click of a button, we are really becoming distracted and we're neglecting our own actual here and now bodies. And our bodies were meant for movement. We have pretty big lungs in comparison to our overall body mass. And that's because we need that oxygen to get into our lungs and into our bloodstream and ultimately to our brains. And when we just kind of sit around and let everything be done for us and we don't get oxygen into our bodies, into our brains via exercise and movement, then I think that's the basis for a lot of the problems that we are facing right now. So, and I'm sure as a PE teacher, this isn't anything new for you, Philip, but it also brought me to a point of curiosity when I was looking at your own podcast and I saw that you did a episode on
Wendy Suzuki and kind of her impact on this world and really bringing how exercise isn't optional. That's absolutely critical. And the research is there and the brain science is there. And of course the elders from ages ago and the ancients would tell you, duh, right? You know, like, but this mode of making everything comfortable and easy can distract us from things like exercise, right? Why would I need to exercise? I'm not going to have to go, you know, chase down a lion in the wild. But your brain doesn't understand that from a biochemical level, right?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked because I'm actually one of the credentials I hold as a PE teacher too. So
there you go.
I've actually been in PE programs that have middle schoolers and high schoolers strap into a heart rate monitor for a 60 minutes class. And their goal was to have elevated heart rate for 30 or more minutes out of a 60 or 7 minute period. So they actually, Spark. But is based off the research by John Rady, but you know, it actually, to be honest, the hardest part was it changed my teaching because I needed to give kids the opportunity to move and to get their heart rates up. And occasionally that didn't happen, so I'd have to adjust my grades for that day. But as well as why do we have that as our middle school and high school program where I was working, it was because it shows even as an adult, you know, to have moderate to vigorous physical activity 3 to 4 times a week, it literally primes proteins in your brain that makes you more able to process, to critically think, and to overall, you can boil it down to the simplicity of just being a productive adult. Yeah. And so for kids, we would really chime in on, you know, this is literally priming your brain to learn. So, but for adults, it's really just being a productive person, being creative. And I also, you know, there's other effects just, you know, for just the mental or emotional release too. But the research is there. And I think that's what Dr. Suzuki was talking about in the podcast. But one of my favorite things she says is that she calls it power vacuuming. So you could even, she says, she even knows people that try to get their heart rates up around the house doing chores. And I also had a podcast in December that mentioned this, that one of the, there's research, global research actually, through an organization in Brazil that says if a man gets as close to possible as sharing 50% of household chores with his spouse or with his wife, that translates to a happier, more connected couple. And it's like out of all the things, you know, I think beyond just basic communication, but I thought, oh my gosh, that hit so many light bulbs, turned so many light bulbs on for me, especially because my wife's love language are acts of service, and she has a very high standard of keeping her house clean. So I was like, oh man, this is going to check a lot of boxes here now that I'm realizing this. And in fact, about 10 days ago, I started the Miracle Morning practice by Hal Elrod. Mm-hmm. And so he has 5 things you do every day. And then he also suggests you add your own 5. So My second five that I added, one included doing the dishes every day, and one included doing one chore, one household chore, you know, before I start my day. So I figured if I could make that habit, well, then that's seven household chores I'm doing that I normally wouldn't do.
Nice.
And so I think I went on a bit of a tangent there, but I think all these things are a little bit connected and would help people out. And I think it just goes to show that just bring a little bit of intention, whether it's your morning routine or just knowing your partner, it's going to help you feel more connected to your spouse.
Absolutely. And for folks that may not be familiar, Hal Elrod has written two books now, right? The Miracle Morning and then The Miracle Method, I believe is his latest book. And the morning routine that Hal spelled out for the world and one that I use daily is called Savers, right? And so, and that's just a morning routine that for me has been super helpful over the past 2 years. I just got back from vacation on Maui and I did it on vacation as well. So I try not to take any days off. And for me, it's really been beneficial. It's not a chore. And for me anymore, like it used to be, at first it was difficult and hard and I couldn't figure it out and just kept at it. But now when I don't do it, I recognize a difference in how I am through that day. So SAVERS is the acronym for the Miracle Morning, right? So silence, affirmations, vision work, exercise, reading, and scribing. So those are just a cap that off for folks that may be listening to this who don't know who Hal Elrod is or what the morning routine, the Miracle Morning, is all about. And for me personally, it takes me about 45 minutes to get through that. So I have my own kind of adaptation of Savers. But for me, a big part of it is making sure that I get my workout in the morning during my Savers routine, because otherwise the day will take it away from me. So So Philip, tell me how you got connected to Hal Elrod and what kind of impact it's made on you, both as a dad, a teacher, and as a coach.
Yeah, so I was really impacted, actually. I think he has a series of books now that are under the series of The Miracle Morning. And actually, through the mastermind that you and I are in, we share it with an author named Lance Salazar, who wrote a book with him, so the co-authored a book. And I was just really inspired with the Miracle Morning for couples. Lance wrote it with his wife, Brandy. And it's funny, it's not funny, but it's a coincidence that at the beginning of the book, they start by talking about how, you know, they had a solid marriage or, you know, normal marriage, but then they realized they were kind of just living in the blahs a little bit. And maybe there wasn't so much growth in their marriage. And then that eventually became to the point where they thought, like, are we going down the road of separation and things like that? And through this tough time I've had with my son the last 12 months, obviously, it's normal that it took a toll on my marriage as well. So I picked up the book and I encouraged my wife to pick up the book. And we both kind of looked at each other like, wow, they sound a lot like us. And so just through Lance and, you know, being inspired to connect with Hal and all that, it really made me motivated, both hearing his Lance and Brandy story about their relationship and how they turned it around. And really the power of being intentional and starting your day. And it makes a lot of sense that, you know, just what's the purpose of sleep? It really is to reset us. And when are you freshest? You literally are in the morning. But what if you can do a few actions in the morning that really help promote that type of sharpness and availability, both personal availability and emotional availability throughout the whole day? And so that's really why I kind of latched on to the Miracle Morning, both as a practice and as well as a message that I want to share with my podcast listeners too.
And what kind of impact has it had for you thus far?
So it just made me, I think, a lot more mentally sharp and also confident as well. So I don't think it's an accident that as soon as I started the Miracle Morning, I've never felt more connected with my son. And you know, I've been there for him. I've always believed that dads just need to be present. You know, a lot of dads think, am I doing this right or wrong? And to me, there's no right or wrong way as long as you're present and making yourself available to be with your child, next to your child, interacting with your child. But to me, it's now that my son's at the age where, you know, he's really into pretend play and things like that. It's awesome just to interact with him and to know that pretty much let him take the lead. And for me to play the follower role is a lot of fun too. And like I said, Lance Zambrandi's book has a small bit about how to connect through your morning routine with your wife or partner. And to me, just the simple, whether it be a 3 or 5 minute check-in just for the day, it's felt awesome just to have that alignment with my wife, Brittany, as well.
Nice. Awesome. Awesome. So I want to focus in on something that you said that really caught my ear, right? So when, you know, as coaches, I'm a coach, you're a coach, when we get people exposed to this idea and then all of the questions set in and the practicalities set in. But one of the things that you said, just want to highlight is when I asked you what the impact was, you pointed out that it improved your connectivity with your son, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's a selling point to savers, right? It doesn't say, you know, do savers because it'll help you connect with your son.
Right.
But by being open to the process and what it is, and I'll take a big guess that maybe part of your affirmations are around connecting better to your son. And I could be wrong on that, mm-hmm. but I got a dollar that says there's something in there that if I would to look at your affirmations, that may be in there, right? But if you go into it, you know, with as much of an open mind as possible and letting the process unfold, right, and just committing to taking action, you don't know what's going to come out of it. So for you, that connectivity to your son and then the personal confidence, those are huge things that you, like I said, I don't know that you probably went into that process thinking that you're going to derive those two things. And correct me if I'm wrong. Was that part of your initial thought on that?
Yeah. So I don't necessarily say an affirmation for my family or for my son, but what the affirmation is that connects to this conversation is I have an affirmation on adversity, and the affirmation on adversity pretty much talks about how to zone in on the present moment, which is once again, a skill that we're never taught, a skill that's very hard to practice in today's world of connectivity with social media, screen time, and everything coming at us. But how do we pause that and say, what's going on here in the present moment? And for me to have a 1 second, please. Oh my gosh, it's a busy, busy Friday here at our middle school in Southern California. But I think what I was saying was just for you to really connect with being present with yourself. When I did that with my son, who, like I said, had kind of some emotional regulation issues, I was able to take a step back and say, what's helpful for him? What's not helpful for him? This is hard in the present moment, but that doesn't mean it's going to be hard forever. And so with that presence, with that state of mind, I'm able to let the more difficult challenges pass. And to me, it's almost like a calling of like, when I get that present, I then zone in on what are possible solutions. And so I like the way you mentioned in your question to me, like self-confidence, because I think these are really related, that the more present you can get, the more problem solving you can ask for, and you can see different options that are successful. And when you do that as a pattern, when you're present, you find a solution, you feel good about it. You're present, you find a solution, you feel good about it. And when you take those steps over and over again, then it just becomes an expectation rather than just a practice or a skill.
Yeah, it becomes second nature, right? Yeah. And then I also loved, again, you're no surprise, right? Because we're both in the coaching world. You also emulated another big concept that if you want better results, you got to ask better questions, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you were looking at helping your son, what I heard you say was, you know, what's going to help him? What's going to be effective for him? And those are great, great questions, right? But a different type of question or a different type of mindset, which we're going to tip into, would be, why is this so frustrating? Why doesn't he just get over these things? Or why am I such a failure as a parent or a father, right? And how our brains work, right? Because our brain is designed for one and one thing only, which is to keep us alive and to survive. Mm-hmm. So that kind of fear response is hardwired into us. And then when we ask questions, our brain is primed to then fill in all the holes, right? So if you ask the question, why am I a failure as a father? Well, your brain's going to give you automatically, boom, you know, 15, 20, 100 things, examples right there about why you're a failure as a father. But if you ask the question, what is going to help my son? Well, your brain's going to fill in those holes too, right? And so just learning how to ask better questions can be a huge thing that can move us from that point of being not confident, right, that you were talking about, to the point of being much more confident here and now. So your thoughts on that, asking better questions to get better results.
Yeah, I mean, I think self-talk is so important. And I think, like you mentioned, to initiate your own self-talk, you really do have to be very careful about the questions you ask, because I've actually asked both those questions, and asking why I'm such a failure is a deep, dark place that it's not the fun to be in. And even when you're in it and you realize you're in it, it's still not fun to be there. And so sometimes it does take just a reset. And the, you know, encouraging part is that reset comes from you, and that reset can come from your own self-talk. Like you said, if you shift the question from why I'm a failure to what resource do I, how do I find the answer? What can help my son? Or what resources do I have available to help me find the answer of what will help my son? You know, I had to ask myself both those questions the last 12 to 14 months as well. And I realized, like, for example, he went through a phase where he would want to bite and hit me really hard, which, you know, in some respects is typical for a toddler. But sometimes it could be like more, turn into something a little bit more violent. And so it took me to realize that, you know, the toddler, the two-year-old mind is just really about, one, very self-centered, which is normal. And two, it's all about learning cause and effect. So it's like, if I bite dad and he has this reaction, then let's see if it will happen again and again and again. So at some point, and you know, you might be able to remember your toddler days with your boys, or whoever has toddlers listening to this might realize, like, some point you have to realize when ignoring is important, or when just shifting the conversation or that child's focus, that could be a really, really easy coping mechanism to employ as the adult too. But if I take it on as like, oh my gosh, this kid's so controlling, or he hates me because he's biting me, then those are a lot of emotions that you just don't actually have to entertain.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it takes discipline to kind of pull yourself back from that. So when my oldest was around, and he was a toddler, still around, but when he was young, he was a kind of a smaller kid. And so he would have that, and he was very kind of inviting. He's a, you know, fun kid to be around. He's easy to spend time with. And so when he was little, you know, with relatives or friends, you know, they would pick him up, they'd scoop him up, and he'd have a big smile. And then because he was, you know, easy to kind of lift up, you know, especially males would start lifting him up, looking him eye to eye. And then almost without exception, he'd start kicking you. And so the amount of people that got kicked in the throat or got kicked in the mouth, and we had to tell him, like, look, if you're going to pick him up, he's going to kick you, right? And the first couple times when it happened, though, I mean, it happened with us at home, but we didn't know that it was going to happen outside of the home with other people, right? And then when the first time it happened, I was like, oh, you know, and he was just having fun. He wasn't trying to hurt us, right? But it really did hurt too. So it was just kind of, how do you balance the intentionality with the reality of the outcome, right? And helping him understand that, you know, kicking is not okay, right? You can hurt people when you do that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, I want to flex the muscle of having my kid advocate for himself too. So I want him to be able to speak up, and I want him to be able to make requests. But at the same point, he's not even three yet. So it's you know, my responsibility also to set those boundaries on these things it's okay to speak up about, and these things it's not. So I think that's all part of being a parent of a toddler.
Sure. So, Philip, one of the things that I'm always interested in is hearing from folks that are making a transition in, you know, like you are making a transition into coaching, and then asking you about the, you know, the overlap that exists between being a coach and your formal training and experience as being a middle school teacher. So how do you describe coaching, and how has your track thus far as a teacher kind of spilled in a positive way into your coaching efforts?
Well, that's a good question, because I know a lot of people that do make career shifts. A lot of the start of that really is talking about like transferable skills. So I don't know if this is the right way to answer your question, but the easiest way for me to think about it is I actually like to think about my coaching as teaching because that's what I'm trained in. I got into the teaching profession because I'm a third generation, you know, K through 12 teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I used to carry a lot of pride into just like, this is what comes naturally to me. This is what's in my blood. And so I enjoy the coaching aspects, whether it be like a retreat or a workshop, getting in front of people. I mentioned that I was able to take my career abroad and work in what's called international schools, which are for expat kids and families. And so without actual like state or government curriculum, I was able to be really lucky enough to be creative in my lessons and really, whether it be middle school or elementary, be really creative and get the blessing of the principal to really try new things that aren't really the norm. And so that's another aspect that I really enjoy in coaching is not being afraid to think outside the box and really teach people in a different way and be able to connect with people and through different mediums and content creations as well.
Sure. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would venture to guess that your methods of teaching in PE, right, may look a little bit different than maybe a standard classroom teacher as well. So talk about transferable skills that way. Like how does you specifically being a PE coach inform what you do as a life coach or PE teacher? Sorry. Yeah.
So yeah, I actually teach social studies and PE. So I'm half the day inside and half the day outside.
Good balance.
But I think, you know, with PE, I always tell kids, well, I've kind of flip-flopped in my career between elementary PE and middle school PE. And I'm at a very high poverty school right now. So a lot of kids don't have a lot of supervision at home. So it's kind of their nature to buck authority or buck rules and buck boundaries and test them. But I really tell my students, you know, PE is really about a couple of things. One is listening. One is knowing, being organized because there's naturally transitions through a PE lesson. And three is following the rules. So I never actually thought of it this way, but you know, those are pretty important life skills, I guess, for any adult to have, to be kind of fluid in knowing that transitions are normal, to make sure you're communicating well to people and, you know, that you're holding yourself to kind of a moral standard or connecting with your vision. And I know a lot of vision work that's tied with what your actual core values are is also really important. I know in the mastermind that we're in, it's one of the first activities that men are asked to do is to connect kind of with their core values. And so, for example, I talked about, you know, living across the world. So traveling is one of my family's core values, as well as being outside. We really enjoy hiking, and being in Southern California, we can do that, you know, 10 and a half or 11 months out of the year, thankfully. But so, for example, when my son was born, I actually took a year off of working, and my wife and I, we thought, wouldn't it be cool to take him to a different national park site every month of his life? So, you know, people usually have their blanket down and they take a picture every month. Well, we decided to take a picture at a different national park site for 12 months in a row.
Awesome.
And so that was just something we randomly created, but that was based off our core values of being outside, exposing our son to nature. Mm-hmm. And now we found a nature preschool that he goes to 2 half days a week. So it's really evolved from just like, we know this is important to us. I was actually telling a story of someone on a Facebook group the other day that, oh, my wife like hiked up an extinct volcano like 2 weeks before my son was born. And he was like really impressed with that. But to me, it's just like, well, that's what we did. You know, we like hiking. And so we knew we liked hiking. So it evolved into, you know, all these several road trips once a month. Nice. And now it's exposing him to being in a school setting, but it's also an outdoor school setting as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so we mentioned it twice. I want to make sure to clarify it for the listeners. So Philip and I are both in the Dad's Edge Alliance, which is a mastermind that is part of the Dad's Edge podcast that was started by Larry Hagner. So I just wanted to put that out there. You've heard us talk about it twice. And so that's what it's all about. And if you want info about that, I'll put it in the show notes there too. But that's how people like Philip and I have connected, is being part of an overall group that really has quality people, quality men in it. And I just am grateful for that project and the reality that I got to connect with Philip through that.
And it's awesome that, I don't know about your area, but I've connected with so many people just in my kind of local area that I've also in that mastermind. So even though it's a national mastermind, it's always great to figure out how to be involved and get in front of men as well, face to face. And I think that's a value that I've really been intentional about the last 4 or 5 months is, especially moving to Southern California and never living here before. You know, like I said, my son was born 3 weeks after I moved here, and I literally had no family and no friends around. So it took me a long time to really see the value in that as well.
Yeah. And it's an international mastermind too. There's folks from all over the planet in there too. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a virtual Elks Club, right? To a certain degree, or virtual fraternity that there are a handful of folks here in my area in Salem, Oregon that are in the Alliance as well. And I've had a chance to meet with them in person too. So it is cool. And I was in Salt Lake City, Utah a few months ago, or early summer 2019, and just put it out there in the group. Hey, I'm going to be in Utah. Who wants to connect? And it's kind of fun, but yet weird that you can just show up in a place that you're not familiar with and connect with a man and a brother just based on being part of this mastermind. So it's a neat thing.
Yeah, I think that's what I really appreciate about it, because I am guessing that I think, you know, there's a lot of online communities out there, but I think maybe the next step would be what I'm calling right now a hybrid community. And it's exactly what you're describing, where, you know, a lot of times it's online just because of the ease, but it's also, you know, knowing those people or knowing those, that there's people out there that you can trust and connect with, whether it be Salt Lake City or wherever else you're going. If you're making the time for it, then they'll make the time for you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty neat. So I want to get back to kind of more from your perspective and your development and evolution. Your website's called Fatherhood Mindset, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So I'm really curious and interested how you defined and how you talk about mindset as a concept.
So that's a great question. I think so many people use the word mindset, but it's not something that's easily defined, is it? So to me, a mindset is really just being intentional about evolving. I think it's most people's objective in life should be to evolve. And I think it's natural for people to evolve as well. And I think that's why it's important to also, if you're in a relationship, to really support each other and evolving and understand that that could be a normal progression as well. And so I think people like yourself and myself and coaches and people who are striving to make an impact in the world, I think it's important for you to have that vision of how you're going to evolve and hold it and make sure that you don't have to know what your plans are 7 or 8 years from now. But if you know what your plans are 3 or 4 years from now, that's really important, because it's going to be a different you 3 or 4 years from now. And you don't have to decide what's next for that new you 3 or 4 years from now. That's going to evolve. And so I hope that makes sense. But to me, it's just like knowing that evolution within your own personal growth is natural and it can be intentional, and you're the person in charge of it. And so I came up with this analogy a few days ago, so I hope you don't mind if I share, but
let's hear it.
I'm a big Back to the Future fan, so here it goes. So I think mindset or creating a vision is a little bit like the DeLorean itself. And so you're able to input the date on the dashboard, but you can really choose whatever date you want. So there's that one, I think it's Back to the Future Part 1. He realizes, wait, I got all the time in the world. I want to save Doc from being shot. I can just go back into time 10 minutes beforehand and then get to the mall to warn him. So he is deciding literally where he's going in the future. And so I think that's a little bit about your own personal vision or your personal connection to core beliefs, like I talked about earlier. That's the dashboard. And then there's the speed. You need to get up to 88 miles an hour. So I think that's a little bit like the systems or the commitment or how you're mentally dedicating yourself to your own growth. So what systems do you actually have in your life? I think that's actually the speed. You know, if Marty's cruising at 68 miles an hour, he's not actually going to go anywhere. He has to get up to 88 miles an hour. And lastly is like the actions you actually put. I think that's the 1.21 gigawatts you actually need to get into space travel. So once again, you know, you can be putting some actions in there, but you're not going anywhere if you're at 0.8 gigawatts. You actually have to get to 1.21 gigawatts to go through space travel. So to me, that was a bit of a dorky analogy of how I kind of see personal growth and really evolving as a person with a mixture of knowing where you're going, being intentional about what you can implement, and then actually putting actions behind it.
Awesome. I'm taking notes on that because I absolutely love it.
I saw your hand start going. Yeah, crazy.
I think there's some wisdom to that too, right? I'm 42. I don't know how old you are, but you know, it's people like us that are now coming into, I mean, by the numbers, this is the peak income, right? At least for me, right? When you in your 40s, you're going to potentially peak on how much money you have. And so the businesses in my area that are popping up, like there's a eatery that's in my locale, and I know it's somebody my age that runs it, because when you walk in there, he's got screens up everywhere, and there's always the movie Red Dawn is playing. It just plays on a loop, right? And the music and the decor, it all comes out. The fact that you're tapping into Back to the Future as a metaphor for mindset, I think that you're going to get a lot of traction from that, because it's that is something that kind of defines kind of the, at least I'll say, the later ed of Gen X, right? And right. Into there, we all can relate to that story, whether we like it or not. We know kind of what the reference is all about, right? So I was just kind of sitting on all the great Scott and Marty and all that kind of stuff when you were explaining it. So I really like that. But so tell me, there was three elements to it, right? There's the knowing where you want to go, right? There was making sure that you get enough speed, and then what did you call the gigawatts? Was that making sure that you have enough energy or action? How do you describe that?
So the speed was about just knowing, kind of mapping it out, or knowing what actions or systems you want to get there. And then the gigawatts was actually doing it. So what's your actual actions? Like, I've been kind of on a personal growth path for about 2 years, but then myself, and I think this happens to a lot of people, it's like you've almost learned just about everything you know how to learn, and you realize everyone in personal growth basically has the same message and a different wrapping. Yes. And it's just like, okay, I know what this is, but, and then it's like, well then why the heck am I not doing it, kind of thing. And so I think a lot of it, I like, to be honest, like I had 6 weeks where I kept having a debate in my own head about what's the difference between commitment and dedication. And then I thought, like, who cares what the difference between commitment and dedication is? You know what you got to do, just do it, kind of thing. And it was just kind of silly that I realized, man, I've been thinking about this concept for like 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, but does it really matter? Or is it just the actions actually matter? So I think a lot of people kind of come to that point as well, especially, you know, people who are avid book readers. It's like, sometimes it's very hard to put good concepts into action, but, that's when accountability partners and other things come into practice.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was exposed to a concept through Nick Peterson. He's a guy that you can find online, but I'm plugging into him for just business concepts. And, you know, he does a lot around this idea of action is superior to intellect. Mm-hmm. Right. So you can know all the stuff there is to know, but if you don't actually do anything with it, then you really haven't done much, right? And so action is superior to intellect. And if you're a bold enough, brave enough, risk adverse type person, just by taking action, you're going to learn what you need to learn along the way, as long as you, again, have the mindset of there's no failure, there's just learning, right? And so
yeah, I really like that, because one of the first people I started following was from a man from San Diego named Jake Ducey, although I think he lives in Maui now. And he was kind of an all-county basketball star in high school, and he got a basketball scholarship to a small college in Southern California. But he wanted to learn, and he was asking questions like in a freshman economics class, and he wasn't happy with the answers his professors were giving. So he ended up dropping out of college and writing his own books. And I went to one of his seminars, and I was asking him from the perspective of a teacher, like, you know, how young, or what would be the ideal age to really support some of these personal growth and personal development and personal vision theories and practices that you teach, that you read, that you write about in your books. And he was basically saying, you know, you could do this at 18 years old. And I like how you said it's kind of more about what is your action rather than your intellect, because I don't know what's in store for my son, but I know my wife, especially a little bit more than me, holds a theory that, you know, sometimes experience is more important. Action, experience, and confidence is more important than perhaps like a degree or this or that or what's on your resume. So there's different paths for different people, but I think that's something to keep in mind too, that you really are in charge of creating whatever you want in life. And it's just sometimes hard to identify what that is, but it is possible if or when, whatever age you are, to do that.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So just to kind of frame up again, what your take on mindset is, and I'll do my best to kind of summarize what I heard. So even if you're going to take the mindset as like the DeLorean from Back to the Future, right? There's some aspects in there that really link directly to mindset, right? First, you have to accept that this DeLorean exists, right? Which is, you've got to be able to say, I do have influence. I do have responsibility. I do have capacity to bring into this world, into this life, in an intentional way, things that I desire, and hopefully things that you desire that are linked to your core values, right? And that right there is kind of the initial shift in terms of mindset that has to be in place. Otherwise, you're going to say that the DeLorean doesn't exist, right? And that right. Life is just happening to you. Does that make sense? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, one thing that comes to mind to that is if you're not sure where to start, I like doing this activity, and it's an activity that's three parts, and it's basically called a be, do, have activity. So thinking in the next 12 to 18 months, write three columns. One says be, one says do, and one column says have. And then number 1 to 30 in each column. And so thinking about the next 12 to 18 months, write down 30 things you want to have, 30 things you want to be, and 30 things you want to do. And so I did this, like I said, when my son was 4 or 5 months old. And then it got lost. It actually got lost in a drawer somewhere for like, you know, 10 or 11 months. And I found it later and I looked through it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, so many... Obviously, you're not trying to, you don't have to go for 100% success rate, but just things like, you know, I want to paddleboard a little bit more often. It's like, wow, I actually sought out where I could go paddleboarding around here. Or I want to run my first half marathon. Well, I ran my first half marathon. And it's just a way, a very simple way to, like you said, bring intentionality to what you can control and what you want to put your focus on, because there's so many different things to put your focus on. And like I said at the beginning of, you know, our talk here today, sometimes there's a season in your life where you're kind of forced to put your focus on, whether it be your relationship, your career, your own health, or even your relationship. Did I say that already? Your parenting, I think, was the other one. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's just very noticeable, and sometimes it takes just a simple activity like this to think about, how are you going to evolve or involve your core values into how you're living?
Awesome. No, I love that example of be, do, have. And I want to run something by you. It's something that I don't personally struggle with as an individual, but it is something that I've heard both from my clients and just people in general where I'm having these conversations with the people that I direct at work. So going back to your be, do, have exercise, and I really love that one. I wrote it down again. So the 1 to 30 things for each of those categories, be, do, have. And then you said, you know, your goal isn't to achieve 100% of those, right? But there's a certain type of person that will say this to themselves and to others. Well, if I write down 30 things that I'm going to be, and then I look at it and I've only done, you know, less than 30, isn't that automatically a failure, right? So how do you help people kind of adjust to that piece of it? You're going to write them down. You say your goal isn't 100%, but then how would you respond to somebody that says, well, what's the point of writing them down if you're not going to do it?
So that's a good question. I guess to me, a few things come to mind. Like one, it's like if you did 4 out of 30, isn't that better than doing 0 out of 30? Like if you never actually wrote them down or never actually thought about it, then there's no guarantee that you'll actually try to do any of those 30. So like to me, like the fact that you're writing it down is a success. And, there is actually research out of a university in Northern California that talks about, you know, you have a much higher success of actually achieving a goal if it is written down, and actually even more success if it's written down and shared with someone. But like writing it down, I think, is part of the process. Like you can either choose to write it down or choose not to write it down. But if you are going to take time to write it down, then go for as many as you want. Or maybe 4 is a wrong example. Maybe after you write it down, you tell yourself, how many of those 30 would you be okay with achieving in the next 12 to 18 months? So writing it down and making a goal from the start, that might be another strategy you want to do. But to me, it's funny because I'm saying this as a teacher, but it's not like a grade. It's not 4 out of 30. That's not your percentage. It's just a way for you to focus on bringing intentionality to how you want to live.
Yeah, really, as you were talking about it, it reminded me of a book that was really impactful for me in 2019, which was Chop Wood, Carry Water. And it's a book that I recommend to everybody that I'm working with. And that concept is there too. So anyway, it just came to mind when you're...
Yeah, I have another mentor, Jack Canfield, who wrote The Success Principles. And one of his success principles is to ask. And he says, be an ask hole. And so ask so much. So he tells a story about going to like a Remax, real estate training in Indiana. And he says, he goes into this massive training with like 300 or 400 people. And he says, who in here can tell me the top 3 house sellers the last year? And he's like, probably 95% of people in here could say who the top 3 people in this company are. And he goes, so how many of you would go up to any one of those 3 and say, how did you do it? How did you, or why are you so good? What's one strategy I can learn from you? And he said, most people, just don't make time to do that because they're afraid that they'll get denied. But he said, look at the 2 things that would happen. If they deny you and say, no, I'm not going to tell you anything, you're right exactly where you are today. So why is that a bad thing? It's not really a bad thing. You're just right where you were anyways. But then think about the other option. What if they say, sure, I'll give you a few tips? Then that can take you from here to there. You know, maybe it can spur your growth and consciously get you in a better spot for your family or for your own personal goals. So that kind of came to mind too, is like so many people are afraid to label things as, a put down or a reject or a failure. But by convincing yourself not to even take the action. Here we are talking about actions again. Who's really setting themselves for failure if you're not even going to do it?
Absolutely. Love it. I'm a big Jack Canfield fan as well. So I love his take on vision work and affirmations. And he just has an incredible story. So awesome that you brought that up. So one maybe final question, we'll see where it goes. So you've combined fatherhood and mindset into a title, right? The fatherhood mindset. So to tell me how those things come together for you, and how do you describe that?
So to me, it's kind of a combination of my own story. And like I said, for 12 or 14 months, it was just major, major adversity I had to fight through, I had to get through. I had to learn, really be intentional, like our conversation today, about what story I'm telling myself. I've gone through like bouts of, you could call it daddy blues or depression, and bouts of just really figuring out how to show up. And like I said, it's just so crazy to think about how my emotional dysregulation was triggered by his emotional dysregulation. But then me thinking about who's the adult here and how can I help him as his dad. And so for me to see the successes I've seen, it's been a lot of hard conversations that I've had with my wife and myself about how I was raised. I was raised in a very easygoing upper middle class household where I was telling my wife just the other week, I literally can't think of a second place thing that was as challenging as kind of this period of self-injurious behavior that my son went through. I was like, you know, I just lived like this really straightforward childhood where I had a lot of ease and a lot of things, like natural things provided for me. And so there was a lot to dig into that. Like, why is this happening to me? Why is this so hard? So I've just felt like I've wanted to be intentional about how I design my life. I want to be intentional about how I want to change my career. And I've followed an intuitive calling to work with men in that way. And so for me, it's kind of like, I know this is kind of cliche, but it's kind of like a design your own life thing. Like, you really have the power to do that. But I think it takes more than just hiring a coach. I think it takes more than just, you know, figuring a few things out. And I think it's like that 1.21 gigawatts. It's really a commitment to creating habits around the actions in different aspects of your life, whether it be your exercise, who you're spending time with, and what your actions are, and what your connection is with your family as well, to really propel you forward into having success in these objectives that you're setting for yourself.
Awesome. I love that. And I know, you know, for me personally, when the reality set in that our firstborn son was coming around, you know, I was literally scared out of my mind. And a lot of that had to do with my own personal childhood and, you know, my story to tell around, you know, my father experience. And I'm not going to get into that in this podcast, but the outcome of that was, is that when the reality set in that I'm going to be a dad, I had no idea. I had no idea what to expect. I thought I was going to mess it all up. And so now that, you know, he's 16, he's turned 16 this month. And so I too generate a lot of, desire and satisfaction with helping, expectant fathers and young fathers just kind of understand that with a little bit of purpose, a little bit of an intentionality, a little bit of risk taking, it'll be okay. You know, you'll get through it. And, so I really appreciate that you're taking up this effort in an intentional way as well.
Yeah. And I think to me, the word legacy comes to mind too, like not just legacy as far as what you want to leave for your kids, but now I'm entering the season of like, my son notices everything my wife and I do. And so it's like, how can I know that he's literally copying everything I do? And then what do I want? What can I teach him to be successful? You know, I have a Jack Canfield certification as in the success principles. So it's like, literally, what can I teach him as things you're not going to learn in school? Because I'm a teacher and I know that you're not going to learn this in school, but what are things that you can do to be successful for yourself? And so I think that's important as well. When you think about legacy and what you're leaving and how you're setting an example for your kids.
Awesome. Super impressed by that Jack Canfield certification. That's awesome. Way to go. Right.
And, Thank you.
Yeah. And so you're a coach. And so tell me how somebody could get connected to you, because, you know, the people that are listening to this podcast, you know, I'm sure there's going to be fathers in all different stages. And I really think that they could benefit from working with somebody like you. So how do people find you out there?
So the easiest way is to find me on Instagram, which is The Fatherhood Mindset is my handle. It's Fatherhood Mindset. I always say the because it's just easy to add the, but look for me at Fatherhood Mindset. Awesome. And that's where I post things about my podcast, different programs that I have coming up. And we've started this conversation talking about the Miracle Morning. So I'm going to be launching this month a program for dads to think about what your daily or morning routine is. And there'll be an option for kind of a free accountability group that go along with that. And we're really going to start at just like, how can you be intentional with 10 minutes and then increase that to 25 minutes a morning. And then we'll go from there. So like I said, the Instagram page is the best way to be in contact with me. Send me a direct message And there's a link there to the website, which is also fatherhoodmindset.com.
Awesome. And just to give somebody a preview, say somebody connects with you and they're actually going to start coaching with you. What can they expect kind of on the first phase of that working with you?
So I think a little bit of the same kind of threads that we've been talking about today is really getting intentional and connected with what your values are, and also thinking about, do your wife and you have a shared vision as well? Because I think that's really important. I was talking to a father this week who was having a lot of communication problems with his wife. And I said, well, do you and your wife have a shared vision? And he was like, well, we want our kids to go to college someday. And I'm like, so it's telling this dad, no, I'm talking about you and your wife with a shared vision of the next three years or so, because to me, that's how you get on the same page with your spouse. So a lot of just, you know, I talked about the DeLorean, figuring out what date you're going to put on the dashboard first. So you can't move to where you want to go if you don't know where that location is. Yeah. So that's a lot of the first steps of the programs I offer.
I love that. And that's powerful. My personal formal education and training is in the counseling field in Oregon. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and my doctorate was in counseling. And the work that I would do with couples was exactly around this. And I wouldn't do this necessarily in session with couples, but outside of session, if I was providing consultation or somebody was picking my brain, that's exactly what I would say, that a lot of the problems that come into play in couples counseling is there isn't shared vision. Right. And what, you know, when I, on a consultation end, when I would say, so when you got married, what was your plan for 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years? Right. Mm-hmm. And I had yet to run into a couple that actually could answer that. Right. So they just got married. Right. Mm-hmm. But then they didn't have shared vision, and they didn't have a, you know, when we look back on this after 5 years, what do we want to look back on? And then how can we backwards engineer that? Right. from day one, that this wasn't in place. And that's how a lot of these other kind of drifting occurs, you know, this, who are you now? I don't know who I am. And some of that can be staved off by having kind of a front end plan. So I'm really super excited, you know, from a professional counselor end of things, that you're doing that work with people, because it's huge. And I saw it in the counseling office all the time.
And I think that's part of why it's helpful to work with a coach, because usually if you work with a good coach, you know, the biggest impact is on the front end there. You know, a good coach will offer you those types of things. So I do think it's really important. And you mentioned it from your line of work as a couples counselor. And I know even I've been aware of it in my own relationship too, right? So like I know the rockiest weeks or months of my relationship, I felt really disconnected to like, what are we doing here? What's our vision again? And so I'm glad to have those skills and to have those awarenesses. But like you said, it just makes a huge impact, whether it's your own vision and then how that ties with your wife's vision as well, because, or her vision as well, because so you both can support each other.
Awesome. Philip, I really have appreciated taking this time and just having this conversation, and I hope it's the first of many conversations that we get to have. One of the things that I like to do on this podcast, The Upgraded Life, is I like to have my guests share something, and for you, maybe pulling from something that you have already said, but share something, and particularly for the expectant father or the young father, share a mindset tip that when they turn off this podcast that they can actually do that day or the next day. What would you tell that new father or the expectant father, mindset-wise?
Mindset-wise, I think it comes back to our conversation we had a little bit earlier about what questions you're asking yourself and what your thoughts are in your head. So I have this simple journaling technique that I do sometimes that I offer people, and it's called the 5x5x5. So you start with 5 I am statements. So whatever's coming to mind, you would just write 5 I am statements for the day. Right below that, you write 5. You repeat those 5 statements, but you write them as I will statements. Oh, sorry, I mixed those up. Okay. So let me restart this. So it's called the 5x5x5. You start, it's a journaling activity where you start 5 I will statements. So 5 statements that come to mind with I will. And then the next part is you write you change those I will statements to I am. So it changes it from future tense to present tense. And then after you wrote those, rewrite those five as I am statements, the last five are five gratitudes. So five things that you're grateful for. And so to me, that exercise called 5x5x5, it really helps with just keeping you grounded as far as I talked about locking into the present moment. It's you really designing how you're going to show up for the day. And obviously there's a tons of research around gratitude and the benefits of gratitude as well. So it doesn't take long. That's the beauty of it. It's just 15 things you're writing out. You know, when you get used to it, it could be like a 2.5 to 3 minute thing. When you start, it might be a 5 or 6 minute thing. But it's just so impactful because it really grounds your thoughts into what's going on for you for that day or that week. Or we mentioned being positive around the different adversities that pop up for you as well.
So is that the 5x5x5 something I'm doing daily, weekly, monthly, or what's the frequency for that?
So that's a good question. I know a lot of people say like, well, how do you journal? What do you journal about? To me, my journaling is always flexible. And I think it's flexible because it gets back to that fact where you don't want to bash yourself and say, am I doing this wrong? Am I failing at that? So like I would say times where you might describe yourself as struggling, I would say maybe it's helpful to do this 4 or 5 times a week. But if not, you can just incorporate it when you think you need to do a little bit of stabilizing or groundedness.
Sure. And so to practice what we preach, folks, don't over intellectualize it. Just do it at least once.
Right? Yeah, for sure. Do it at least. Try it and see if you like it. That's probably important too.
Absolutely. Well, Philip, I'm going to say a goodbye to you after that. And I really, really appreciate the fact that you took the time for this. And I think this conversation was awesome. And this is what happens when you get two coaches together. We name dropped a lot of people, right? We name dropped Hal Elrod, Jack Canfield, even Larry Hagner, Nick Peterson. And that's just kind of what happens when you get two coaches, you know, on the same microphone talking about things that we're really passionate about. So just want to say again, super grateful for you. And I really hope that my listeners benefit from this conversation. And for those of you that are in this journey of fatherhood, I really encourage you to connect with Philip and see what the working relationship might unfold there for the two of you.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me, and I'm excited to see what comes of it. Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast. That interview was with Philip Young. I found Philip Young because of his podcast. He's a podcaster. I'm a podcaster. I reached out to him. He said yes, and then that's how this show happened. If you heard something from him that piqued your interest, you want to know more about who he is and what he has to offer, go over to his website, www.fatherhoodmindset.com/podcast. He has his own show, and I would really encourage you to go check out the episode that he did on Wendy Suzuki. Now, I really hope that between whatever you heard here or what you might hear over on Philip's show at fatherhoodmindset.com, please do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That is the way to let Apple and the world out there know that this is a podcast worthy of tuning into. So if that's something that you can take the 2 to 3 minutes out of your busy schedule to do, I really would appreciate it. And if you did it for Philip, that'd be even awesome as well. Well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast, and I'll catch you on the next show.